From Capital Public Radio, this is The View From Here. For most of us, there's no place like home.
You're supposed to come home, and this is supposed to be your sanctuary. You're supposed to walk into a house and be able to fall on your carpet and just be, my day was long, I'm now home, everything is okay.
Okay, the garden. This is where I come out every morning and I have my coffee, or if I get stressed out, I just come out here and sit and garden. And that's why I like my apartment.
We think of home as a safe place, a healthy place, a place where families can be together. But for more and more people, it's getting harder to find and keep a home.
I had a house that I owned for 12 years, and housing market crashed, divorce, job loss. So I lost that house and looked for a place to stay, and this was the only place that I could afford.
It's quite scary. You know you really can't afford it, but you don't have no choice. What can I do?
I was in the computer industry, and I got so stressed out, and anxiety kicked in and depression that, you know, everything just fell apart immediately. And if I wouldn't have got housing, if I would have still been on the streets, I definitely would have been dead by now.
Housing may not be a matter of life and death for everyone. But safe, affordable housing is key to everyone's health and well-being, no matter their age, ethnicity, or economic status. Federal, state, and local housing policies are not making things better fast enough for those in need.
Who's going to help me make this work for me? Who's going to be kind enough to say, I want people to have homes, let me sell homes so that people can have home ownership? You know, it's just frustrating.
In the next hour, we'll explore the housing affordability crisis in California's capital through the stories of people who are hardest hit and living on the edge. I'm Pauline Bartolone.
I'm Amy Quinton.
And I'm Cosmo Garvin. This time on The View From Here, Place and Privilege.
Amber Calloway's housing problem started on a Tuesday night last December. She remembers the day well because it hadn't rained that hard in years. That's when everything started to fall apart. She noticed the carpet was wet in one of the rooms of the three-bedroom house she rents in Meadowview, a working-class, largely minority neighborhood in South Sacramento.
There was, like, water coming in from the wall from outside. So I tried to put, like, a towel down there, and then the drywall just caved in because it was soaking wet.
The carpet in the sunroom was also drenched.
I stepped on it, and you just feel mush, 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 mush everywhere. Like, the whole thing was wet.
Amber, her 9-year-old son, and her fiancé had lived in the house for 5 years. It wasn't the first time they'd had major maintenance problems. This time, a contractor said the problem stemmed from a bad foundation and the slope of the house. Amber called her property management company.
I had concerns, you know, about my family, and I wanted, you know, something better.
She asked about other homes she could rent, but nothing was available. 3 days later, Amber found a termination of tenancy notice in her mailbox. Attached to it, a handwritten note said the owner wanted to sell or renovate the home. She had 60 days to get out. Without a lease, property owners in Sacramento can raise rents or evict tenants at any time without cause, if they give enough notice.
I was basically emotional, angry, scared, sad, all at the same time, to where I just, you know, wanted to just start crying.
Amber had every reason to be scared. She supports her family on her income as a Medi-Cal claims auditor. Her rent is just over $1,100. With utilities, it's a little more than 30% of her monthly income. Housing experts define anyone who pays over 30% of their income on housing as rent overburdened. Amber knew she would have trouble finding something she could afford. In 2016, rents in Sacramento were rising faster than any city in the U.S. Amber says she doesn't have the best credit, but has never been evicted. She called the property management company again.
And so I was crying on the phone to her, you know, begging her to give me another month, you know. And I was like, you just gonna put, you know, put me and my son out on the street if I can't find a place? You know, what if I don't find a place? What happens then?
The owner of her home eventually gave her another 30 days to look for a place. Amber found a 3-bedroom house in a suburb 15 miles away. Moving day starts at 7 a.m. Amber rents a truck. Her fiancé and his 2 teenage sons start loading the furniture. Amber says she's hoping it will take one trip.
It's going to take 2 people over here, bro.
The U-Haul truck gets loaded, but other things don't go as planned. Her stepson locks the keys in the truck. Unlocking it will cost an extra $85. It's not even noon, and Amber is exhausted.
I'm pissed because I don't have the money to fork over, you know, right now. So it's going to have to come from my fiancé because I don't even have it to give right now.
The move ends up taking 3 trips into the late evening, and she's scheduled for work at 6 a.m.
You can slide it until you get out. Slide.
Amber says the search for an affordable home was a stressful competition with multiple applicants for the same house. Sacramento's rental vacancy rate is less than 3%. That puts extra pressure on people like Amber, who have good jobs but tight budgets.
I was stressed and I was worried. I wasn't eating. I wasn't sleeping. I couldn't work on my business. Like, I was just out of it.
She was also spending money. Each rental application cost her $40.
I pay for tutoring for my son, so last week I told her don't come because I use your money, the money that I pay you to do an application fee, because this stuff is adding up. Yeah, that's hard.
Amber's son attends a charter school in Oak Park, which is closer to downtown. He'll now have to change schools because the family lives 15 miles away.
I'm so sad that we have to move him out of there. Just a really good school.
And so he can't go there anymore?
It's going to be too far. Elk Grove, that's way down there.
Amber has been displaced before. She was born and raised in Sacramento and lived right across the street from her rental home in Meadowview. At 15, her mom kicked her out of the house. With no money for food or shelter, she ended up living with her 21-year-old cousin in a studio apartment. Amber would walk by prostitutes and pimps on the way to the bus stop to get to high school. Wanting a better life and a better home, Amber dropped out of high school and enrolled in Sacramento Job Corps, a career training center administered by the U.S. Labor Department. It changed her life.
A lot of people don't expect people like me to make it, and so I get a lot of hate from that. Because if you come from a certain place, they don't expect you to surpass that. So when they see you're doing well, you know, and you're happy, you know, some people aren't happy, you know, so like I have a small circle of people because there's always somebody hating on me for doing well for myself, you know, and my family.
Linda Brooks began her desperate scramble for a new home last summer when her landlord decided not to accept housing vouchers anymore.
So I was quite shocked and didn't know why. My tenancy was terminated.
For months after receiving the termination notice, Linda fought to remain in her home. She wrote to Sacramento Mayor Daryl Steinberg.
Mayor Steinberg, I am a housing choice voucher tenant in the same complex for 21 years, and no complaints, and rent always paid on time. I am also 71 and disabled. There is no city or housing protection for the elderly or disabled behind no cause evictions. Usually, property managers or the owner throw us out for no cause. Fix up the place, look at the skyrocketing prices of apartments in the last 10 years or so. It's crazy out here. I'm putting people out of established neighborhood connections. Their homes, their amenities, that fit their needs, and those getting tossed out get to pay for it. So the landlord can help cause the next housing bubble. You say you want to help those less fortunate. We're waiting. I know you do. I'm so impressed that you are trying your best to bring some help to the homeless with even the support they need to turn their lives around. If I can get my life and living situation settled down, let me know if I can be of any help on these issues, especially housing. Thank you.
Like many people her age, Linda no longer works, and her health is not great. She has glaucoma and anxiety. She sees a cardiologist because of a heart attack she had in 1996. And more recently, a stroke stole part of her vision in one eye. She depends on her housing choice voucher, people still call it Section 8, to help pay her rent. The voucher is funded by the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development and administered locally by the Sacramento Housing and Redevelopment Agency. A third of her $850 rent comes out of her pocket, and the voucher covers the rest. Her apartment in the College Greens neighborhood of Sacramento is not fancy, but it works for her.
So the store is right across the street, which makes it easier for me with mobility impairments.
Linda relies on Sacramento's public transit system. Her doctor's office is an 18-minute trip, including the walk and the train. She Googled it.
I liked it here because I'm on the bottom floor. My doctors are not far. I walk about a block over here to the light rail and then straight down.
Last summer, Linda was given a 90-day notice to vacate her apartment by West Cal Management, the new property manager of her building. She says other tenants with vouchers were kicked out as well, but she was fighting to remain in her home. West Cal manages dozens of apartment complexes in the Sacramento area, promising on the company's website to deliver a superior return on investment. Company president Mike Force told me West Cal decided to stop taking vouchers because the bureaucracy of the program is a burden. He declined to be recorded, but said in a phone interview that West Cal does not, as a general policy, kick out tenants using vouchers in the buildings that it takes over. And yet, Linda's tenancy was terminated. When I met Linda in February, she had until the end of April to find a new home.
I don't drive, but also I rely on public transportation, and I hate the thought of trying to get around with 2 hours there and 2 hours back.
Yeah. So this is for a daily pass?
Uh-huh. Once you transfer now, you don't get passes anymore. You have to buy a daily ticket. So we have to take a light rail, then a bus. So it has to be a daily pass.
So, yeah. Oh, you got some change here.
Yeah, 50 cents.
Just talk about what we're up to right now, where you're headed, and the plan is for this trip.
Well, I'm not sure what's happening with the Garden Club apartment, because before I was on a waiting list, and it sounded promising. They did accept Section 8, so I was happy about that. And in the meantime, it seems they've transferred the manager. Whether that still happens, I don't know, because I can't get anyone to answer the phone or return my call.
That's at the apartments we're going to.
Yes.
And what are they called?
Garden Club Apartments, I think, yeah. Uh-huh. And it is like a 10-minute bus ride to light rail, and you have to coordinate it well because they only run every half hour. So it's not like the current apartment I live in where we just walked over here, 5 minutes or something? So, yeah, and it usually takes me where I need to go. But it's better than living out in Fair Oaks and riding the bus for 2 hours. So
what time are we supposed to get that train here?
10:57.
Thank you.
Gracie Phillips has lived in Sacramento her whole life, all of it in the North Highlands neighborhood, except the last 4 years.
We are in Central Oak Park. I have been here for 4 years, almost to the date.
And why did you decide to move here?
I moved here after I lost my home. I had a house that I owned for 12 years. And housing market crashed, divorce, job loss. So I lost that house and looked for a place to stay. And this was the only place that I could find to afford, which was in Central Oak Park.
When the recession hit, Gracie was laid off after more than a decade of working at AT&T. That started a downward spiral. After the divorce, she spent her retirement savings. Even after going back to school to get a master's degree, she still couldn't find a full-time job. Facing a mountain of student loan debt, Gracie and her teenage son rented a tiny three-bedroom house in Central Oak Park for $1,150 a month.
The neighborhood has personality. I knew what I was getting into, so to speak, when I came here. This is more of a city living, but just neighbors and poor folks. And, you know, we have a higher population of homeless here that I had to get used to. But, you know, the only thing that I was really paying attention to was how much it cost and whether I could afford it.
Gracie says the property manager took her word that she would soon have a full-time job. She now works for Sacramento County Child Protective Services and makes just below the region's median income.
There were some issues with the place. There are still issues with this place. Now, when you walk in, you think everything is fine, and it looks like an okay house. So when I first moved in, this was probably one of the first things that I noticed when I came in here, is that little by little, the windows started coming off of their tracks. So they're gone now. They're all complete. They're in the garage. But, I mean, these are the tracks. They've all come off, and they just, I have no way to open a window. And I have to be careful because the window will come all the way out. And I can't complain because I live in a house where I only pay $11.50 a month. So, you know, but all my drawers were busted, you know, and you just make do because, again, I'm not paying a lot. I think probably the biggest thing that happened when I first moved in is I had to clean this kitchen two or three times. I had them send a cleaning crew out a few times because it was covered in cockroach filth. They gave me a refrigerator. And the refrigerator had frozen roach bodies and all kinds. So I asked them politely to please come get their refrigerator. And I finally had to have my own person come in and clean the kitchen. The oven was filthy. One of the burners didn't work because there were actual, the cockroaches had been in there so dense that they had just shorted it out. So, you know, just make do because this is the only place that I could find.
In California, it's illegal to rent a unit to anyone with roaches present. It's since been cleaned, but Gracie has now been told she must pay for another extermination. The house still has termites and rodents.
So this is the garage, and it's a fantastic garage, right? There's a huge crack down the middle of the floor there. This is all rat poo, and they are, I don't know exactly what kind of creature is in here, but that looks like rat poo. And it was probably no more than a month ago, I think, that I cleaned this garage out. So I came through, rearranged, moved everything in here, cleaned the floor completely, and they come through the holes. So, you know, it's the little things that I can't let these things bother me, with the exception of the fact that this garage door, you have to hold it because it doesn't close properly. And then sometimes it catches and rolls back up. But it's okay. Sometimes you kind of have to lie to yourself to get past it.
She's told her property management company repeatedly about these problems, but she won't call code enforcement because she fears her rent will increase or she'll be evicted, even though it's illegal for a landlord to retaliate.
You know, I know I have to call them, but it's hard. This isn't my house. but this is my life. I know I have rights. I just don't feel like I can exercise them the way I want to. I mean, you're supposed to come home, and this is supposed to be your sanctuary. You're supposed to walk into a house and be able to fall on your carpet and just be, my day was long, I'm now home, everything is okay.
But Gracie isn't okay.
I'm afraid. I'm afraid all the time. And I've worked really hard to get to where I am now because I was a super anxious child. The sky was always falling when I was a child. So I'm a different person now, and I can handle a lot, but yeah, I'm afraid every day. And when you wake up in the morning and you think about this stuff, this isn't healthy. This isn't healthy.
The stress of living paycheck to paycheck makes Gracie's depression and fibromyalgia worse.
My anxiety just goes up because then I start to think about this and I'm like, how the hell am I supposed to make this work for me?
Go to our website, theviewfromhere.org/housing, to read full-length versions of these stories and learn about the historic roots of Sacramento's housing crisis in our 8-part podcast series. You're listening to Place and Privilege on Capital Public Radio's multimedia documentary series, The View From Here. I'm Amy Quinton.
You're listening to The View From Here from Capital Public Radio. I'm Pauline Bartoloni. This is Place and Privilege, a multimedia documentary exploring Sacramento's housing affordability crisis through the stories of people who are hardest hit and living on the edge. During the 5 years Tony Price was sleeping in doorways and roaming the streets, Sacramento's emergency rooms were a warm and safe place to sleep off a hard day of drinking.
A lot of times I would pass out and then I'd wake up in the hospital.
Tony Price is a Sacramento native. He's 50 years old, and he says most of the time it was a passerby or a police officer who called 911.
Well, let's say I went to the emergency 3 times in the month. One time I would call, probably somebody else would call because they'd see me, you know, passed out somewhere on the sidewalk or something, couldn't wake me up. And then there was always the police call, you know. So it's like I would end up at the hospital, then I'd end up in jail, then I'd, you know, detox, and I'd be down the street, end up at the hospital, end up in jail.
Even though Tony frequently went to the hospital, he never got well. His diabetes was uncontrolled. When he lost his backpacks, his anxiety and depression medications were lost with them. Finally, Tony Price attempted suicide, and that's when things turned around.
So I was in the hospital, and it was just happenstance that they had somebody there to come and talk to me.
For Tony, it was happenstance. For the hospital, it was an opportunity for intervention and to find a more meaningful way to improve his health. Dignity Health in Sacramento had recently started a temporary housing program for homeless folks who frequently use their services. The hospital hooked Tony up with a simple one-bedroom apartment in North Sacramento and paid his rent.
If I wouldn't have got housing, if I would have still been on the streets, I definitely would have been dead by now.
But Tony didn't recover alone. Chris Grabe, a social worker from Lutheran Social Services, helped coach him back to health.
You just continue to provide support, you continue to make referrals, you continue to encourage, and everybody is going to do it at their own pace. You can't have that expectation that I'm going to get all this done in 6 months. My first goal is to get them into consistent medical care and not put a time frame on it, but look at what is your goal.
For months, Grabe took Tony to medical appointments and made sure he stuck to his medications. He started all over again with a roof over his head.
Can you take me on a little tour of your apartment?
Sure. Why not? This is the living room. Actually, it's funny. When I first moved in here, I mean, you know, I had nothing. I came, you know, right from the street. So they gave me some furniture, the black furniture, that and the couch and the bed. And then I've slowly, you know, built up stuff. But this is a perfect size place for one person, you know.
Tony had a home before. He lived in the San Francisco Bay Area and worked as a computer technician. But his mental health and his substance abuse got in the way of holding a job. That's when his cycle of homelessness began. Adjusting to having a home after 5 years on the streets hasn't been quick or easy.
And I had one scare here where I was so drunk, they told me that I was outside yelling at people, that I was going to shoot somebody. I completely trashed my apartment. I broke my iPad and I got arrested.
It took Tony 8 months before he stopped drinking. Now he tinkers with computers at home, sometimes working on an app designed to help other recovering alcoholics.
You got to hit bottom. And he did that, and he worked really hard. He's sober. My God, yes, he's sober. He's got his medical care. He's eating healthy. Just watching him bloom as a person, growing the vegetables and that. He started all the vegetables. We gave some of them away to other people. He has stepped up and done a lot of these things. So watching him do some major life changes, it's just awesome. His reduction in going to the hospital, his being stable on his medications, those are the things that we want to see, and those are the things that I have seen with Tony.
Okay, the garden. After you. Come here, Cece. Come on. Thank you. All right, this is year two for the garden. Last year, I did it in real small pots. I didn't get a good yield, and I grew everything from seeds. This year, I went out and got seedlings, and so far, I got a lot of tomatoes going. I got bigger pots, better soil. But this is where I come out every morning and I have my coffee, or if I get stressed out, I just come out here and sit and garden. And it'll be nice when it really gets up high because, you know, not only does it block everything out, but it gives me, you know, nice serenity. And that's why I like my apartment. In the wintertime, it's sparse. But now with all the trees coming in, it's green, it's nice.
It's not just giving them housing. If housing were it, we take care of everything. Period. Give you a home, you're fine. But it's not that. They need a lot of extra support.
Social worker Chris Grabe continues to work with Tony through a different permanent housing program. Now more than 2 years since he's been off the streets, he avoids alcohol and tobacco and cooks all his food. Government assistance pays for his expenses. But Tony still struggles.
I still have the anxiety issues. That's the biggest thing I'm working on right now. But my depression's been taken care of. I'd say 85% of my depression's taken care of. I still get days. But just having a home where I could take the time and focus and not having to worry where my next meal is, not having to worry where I'm going to shower and stay clean or get clothes or sleep that night. I mean, to be quite honest, and that was one of the reasons I stayed drunk, was when you're drunk, you don't care that you're sleeping in a doorway. You know, but when you're sober, it's horrible.
Obviously, the dependency, our hope is that the dependency on the hospital services will be reduced, which is what we're seeing.
That's Ashley Brand of Dignity Health in Sacramento. She says the program has had dramatic results in 16 patients they've served since 2014. Their number of inpatient stays among those clients were cut in half, and there was a 65% reduction in total hospital days.
Patients are actually getting the care they need in the appropriate setting outside the hospital walls.
Homelessness advocates in Sacramento appreciate these investments from hospitals, but they say programs like Dignity's don't tackle the larger forces that plunge people into homelessness.
Now we have a different sort of crisis where all of us, no matter where we live in Sacramento or this region, we see people outside.
Joan Burke is advocacy director of Sacramento's largest homeless shelter, Loaves and Fishes.
We actually have more homeless people living outside without shelter than we have people living in our extensive shelter system. That is new. We have never had more unsheltered homeless than sheltered. And the number of unsheltered went up 85% in just 2 years. And I believe the mayor and the Board of Supervisors and the City Council genuinely want to address this problem. What they have to decide to do is look at root causes as well as immediate relief. We need both. And the root cause is the lack of housing.
For many months after receiving a termination notice from her landlord, Westcal Management, Linda Brooks fought to remain in her home. Her doctor wrote a letter on her behalf, saying that if she were forced out of her housing, it would put her health in grave danger. Then the power went out in Linda's apartment. A lawyer for the tenant rights group Legal Services of Northern California convinced Westcal to give Linda a little more time, arguing that the power outage had hindered her apartment search. She had until June 10th to move out. At this point, Linda had been looking for a new home for almost a year.
Yeah, it's a scramble. It's a scramble. The odds are against you.
Linda Brooks and I step off the bus and start towards the rental office of the Butterfly Gardens Apartments. Across the street is a dated, faded strip mall, liquor store, laundromat, two storefront churches. No grocery store, though, Linda notes. She surveys the neighborhood and the apartment buildings with a critical eye. Linda's legs are hurting, and when she gets tired, her back spasms get worse, too.
I need to live downstairs because I can't do the stairs up and down every day. So, sorry, my leg's hurting.
Okay.
Yeah, no. But carry on. Mm-hmm. Leasing office here, right here?
The sign, but the arrow's pointing, I think, further down.
Yeah.
After a few minutes, I spot the sign for the rental office. It's a long way off.
Need a bus just to get from one side of the complex to the other.
Yeah.
Now, do you know anything about these places?
Yeah. They do accept Section 8.
So, like, the price is in the right range, or?
Can't remember. Can't remember. Oh, there's the office. Okay. You're good.
Get here eventually.
Hi. Are you going to tell me all about your apartments?
How y'all doing this morning?
Good.
You are only interested in a one bed or two?
Two.
That's fair. At the moment, ma'am, we currently don't have anything available, but I will during the end of this.
Inside the rental office, the young woman at the desk explains that the rent on a two-bedroom apartment is $1,090, including water and trash, and that rent would rise 10% every year.
Do you take vouchers here, Section 8 vouchers?
No, ma'am.
Really?
No. We used to, prior to my company purchasing the buildings, once my company did, they decided against taking it.
Oh, because whenever we dropped by here before, we asked, and they said yes. So.
Oh, okay. Currently, no, ma'am, we don't.
The Housing Choice Voucher Program is the largest subsidized housing program funded by HUD. It was created in 1974 when America had soured on the big public housing projects that in many parts of the country had become dilapidated and were being torn down. Lachelle Dozier is executive director of the Sacramento Housing and Redevelopment Agency.
The Housing Choice Voucher Program was a way for families not to be locked into living in a certain neighborhood or a certain complex, and would give them the freedom of choice so that they could search out opportunities in areas that had better schools, better amenities. And also it allows the families to live within communities without the stigma attached to where they live.
When voucher holders can move to high-opportunity neighborhoods, good things happen. For families that move, studies show increases in educational attainment for children and higher earnings for adults.
we see that where a family lives really matters, right? Zip code matters.
That's Deborah Thrope, an attorney with the National Housing Law Project based in San Francisco. Despite the good intentions of the Housing Choice Voucher Program, today voucher holders are often shut out of those high opportunity neighborhoods.
Unfortunately, Linda's experience is not unusual, particularly for families that live in heated housing markets.
Indeed, data provided by SHRA shows voucher holders tend to live in census tracts with lower household incomes. And those are the same neighborhoods which have less access to transportation options, jobs, and amenities.
What we see now across the country is that many voucher families are using their vouchers, but they are increasingly remaining or moving to areas that are high in concentrated poverty.
That's the opposite of what the Housing Choice Voucher Program was meant to do.
It looks like they're trying to put us all in the projects. And I'm thinking, what is this? You know, you're supposed to be, with Housing Choice Voucher, you're supposed to be part of the community. And so, you know, you aren't living in a project with bullets flying over your head or something. So I don't understand what's going on.
In Sacramento, about 12,000 families receive vouchers. The last time vouchers became available, in 2014, 48,000 people applied. The waiting list is at least several years long. About 30% of the people on the waiting list will wind up homeless before they receive a voucher, according to SHRA. The Trump administration has promised billions in cuts to HUD's budget, says Lachelle Dozier.
What is being proposed by the president's budget is just draconian. I mean, we would have huge, huge cuts to our program if it were implemented as proposed.
Those lucky enough to be awarded a voucher may find they can't use it. By SHRA's most recent estimate from 2016, only 60% of voucher holders were able to use their voucher in the period allowed. Landlords are happy to take vouchers when vouchers boost demand in less desirable neighborhoods. But in a hot market, landlords are free to turn away voucher holders.
I don't understand why it is not called discrimination when all the property managers that I have run into, well, no, I won't say all, most of the property managers of private-owned apartments are not allowing voucher people in.
Our reporting team spent months with the people who've shared their stories in this documentary. But Sacramento's housing affordability crisis is much more than an individual problem. Our 8-part podcast series explores the systemic nature of the crisis and offers insights into the problems and solutions facing communities across California and the nation. You'll hear from homeowners, renters, and builders, city and county officials, attorneys, scholars, and housing advocates. It's all at theviewfromhere.org/housing. I'm Cosmo Garvin. This is Place and Privilege on The View from Here from Capital Public Radio.
You're listening to The View from Here from Capital Public Radio. I'm Amy Quinton, and this is Place and Privilege, exploring Sacramento's housing affordability crisis. It's March, and Amber Calloway is giving me a tour of her new home in Elk Grove.
Very small.
It looks brand new, with a modern kitchen and fresh paint on the walls. But again, there are problems. Her gas oven doesn't work, the backyard fence is collapsing, and the grass is knee-high, even though she was promised it would be cut by the time she moved in.
Not happy at all. Not happy at all, because, you know, for me to have to pay, I had to pay, you know, on the 28th when I moved in 2 weeks ago, I had to pay $2,000. And so that was my first month's rent plus pet deposit. And I expected things to be done. You know, I shouldn't have to wait for the stove or wait for the fence or wait for them to cut the grass. They didn't even give me a garage opener. I had to wait a week for that. And I had to go pick that up way in Folsom. Take off work just to go get it.
After a month, she notices more troubling issues. Bubbles in the paint by the chimney have appeared, and she says water is coming in through the floors.
So it's just like the same problems. You pay all this money, you come here, think everything's all good, but there's water issues.
Amber says she's had to cut back on expenses. No more cable. Her family doesn't go out to dinner. Her fiancé sold his truck to lower their insurance. She says she's living paycheck to paycheck. Her housing is unaffordable.
But yeah, it's quite scary, you know. When you know you really can't afford it, but you don't have no choice, what can I do?
Until she had to move from her home in Meadowview, Amber had taken steps to eventually buy her own home. Now, she doesn't know when she might be able to do that. The last time I visit Amber is in May.
I'm pulling up our engagement session photos that we took April 23rd at Baker's Beach in San Francisco.
Oh, nice.
Because it kind of supports the whole beach theme for the wedding.
Amber and her fiancé are getting married in Hawaii next June.
Looks like it's a beautiful sunny day.
Right. But then when you get on the beach, it was a whole nother story. It was also really cold and windy, so you really had to act, you know, like it wasn't cold because it was freezing.
By the time Amber is married, the lease on her Elk Grove home will be up. She still holds out hope that by then, she'll be a homeowner.
Have to keep rolling with the punches. I mean, it's always something, right? Just deal with it and keep on going. I don't know what else to say about it. I don't like pleading a victim. I don't like being looked at, labeled as a victim. I don't like labeling myself as a victim. I mean, stuff happens. This is life.
On June 5th, 5 days before she was supposed to be out of her apartment, everything changed for Linda Brooks. Her landlord, West Cal Management, told her she could stay in her apartment. It's still not entirely clear what caused the company to change its mind or why she was asked to leave in the first place. If Linda felt mistreated, she didn't dwell on it when I met with her after the move had been called off.
I think that that was very considerate of them. To take into consideration that I have been here a long time and let me remain.
Mostly, Linda says she feels tired and not sure what to do with herself.
When it was all over, I was in the kitchen, I was standing there, and I said to my daughter, I says, remind me, what do normal people do? Not a normal routine. You know, I mean, it was all consuming for almost for a year.
And in spite of, or because of, all that she's been through, Linda feels lucky.
I feel very fortunate and kind of like survivor's guilt in a way, because I know so many people. I don't know what happens if you can't find a place, you know? And it's scary, because if you don't, you could end up homeless, you could lose voucher. You have to just keep going and find a place, or you could lose everything.
Who's going to help me make this work for me? Who's going to be kind enough to say, I want people to have homes, let me sell homes so that people can have home ownership? You know, it's just frustrating.
Gracie Phillips talks a lot about the home she once owned in North Highlands. Unable to make the payment, she had to put it up for short sale. She would give anything to own a home again. She reached out to Habitat for Humanity before her current employment, but because of her income and family size, she didn't qualify for a home. Now she's trying the conventional way, by contacting a home loan consultant. But because of her debt and credit score, Gracie can only buy a home worth $165,000, which is about half the median sales price for a home in Sacramento. The home can't be a duplex, condo, manufactured home, foreclosure, or short sale. The loan consultant told her to save what she can.
Which is funny, because how do you do that when most of your money goes toward rent and bills? So, you know, I don't know, I feel impoverished. You know what I mean? I feel almost destitute. I feel like living in my car would almost be okay, because then I could really bank my money and buy a house. You know what I'm saying?
No PG&E, no smud. We could park in front of the school, you know? Wouldn't have to worry about a bus or anything. There's a whole list of things that I could do if I lived in my car. So I feel like I'm on the edge. Right now I kind of feel stable, but I have this feeling that if any big changes happened, that I would just be in more trouble than I could get myself out of. But I'm not losing a house this time. I'm just losing a place to live. So that's a frightening thought.
In Sacramento, many African Americans like Gracie lost their homes during the recession. Census figures show, unlike other demographic groups, the home ownership rate among blacks hasn't bounced back. In 2015, fewer than 30% of blacks in Sacramento owned their home, down from 43% in 2006. By comparison, over 62% of whites owned homes in 2015. Now, Gracie lives in Oak Park, where home flipping has intensified over the last several years. The home she rents is owned by Home Brand Properties Incorporated, whose website claims it flips homes for profit and purchases multifamily units to, quote, remodel, remanage, and re-tenant.
The way that it's explained is that if you want to make money, buy properties and do it the way we're doing it, which is basically turning it over to a property management company and just watch the checks roll in. It's hard to think that it's a bad deal unless you live in one of the homes.
Just a few blocks away from where Gracie lives, renovated homes have become unaffordable to anyone earning median income.
I can't even imagine buying a house for $400,000 that has 800 square feet and no garage. But, you know, they're just displacing the people, just it drives me insane.
She says the metal chain-link fences that used to line the front yards of many Oak Park homes are coming down, and white picket fences are going up. She calls them gentrification fences.
Gentrification is a word that irritates a lot of people. And I'll be honest, it irritates a lot of white people. And most of that is because the people who tend to be displaced are people of color. And, you know, when I first moved to this neighborhood, it was just, you know, brown folks and black folks and, you know, white people have been here forever. This is their neighborhood. And it was just, it had personality. It was just a neighborhood. And, you know, things started to change and housing started to be, I don't know, it just became prime here.
For Gracie, Sacramento's affordable housing crisis has only hit some in the community. African Americans experience the problem more profoundly, she says. She sees it in her own neighborhood as she watches homes flip and black renters get displaced. And Gracie is living proof that home ownership among blacks still hasn't bounced back from the recession. Sacramento's housing crisis is not just a problem for individuals such as Gracie Phillips, Amber Calloway, Linda Brooks, and Tony Price. There are larger forces contributing to the lack of affordable housing.
After the recession, institutional investors moved into Sacramento, bought thousands of single-family homes, and turned them into rentals. Advocates say a lot of those purchases were in more modestly priced neighborhoods, ideal for first-time buyers, including Meadowview and North Highlands, where Amber and Gracie used to live. That's decreased inventory in an already tight market. The lack of supply is pushing rents higher. Sacramento's neighborhoods are changing.
Federal, state, and local housing policies are not making things better fast enough for those in real need. Housing advocates estimate that tens of thousands of low and very low income residents have no safe, affordable places to live. Thousands more in Sacramento have nowhere to sleep each night. Learn more about Sacramento's housing affordability crisis at our website, theviewfromhere.org/housing. You can read full-length stories about the people featured in this program and dig deeper into the systemic issues contributing to their struggles through our 8-part podcast series.
Special thanks to Linda Brooks, Tony Price, Amber Calloway, Gracie Phillips, and their families for sharing their stories.
The View from Here is a production of Capital Public Radio in Sacramento. Executive producer, Joe Barr.
Reporters are Cosmo Garvin, Amy Quinton, and Pauline Bartoloni, with additional reporting by Amy Westervelt. Multimedia producer, Andrew Nixon. Managing editor, Linnea Edmeyer.
Our digital team includes Marnette Federis, Chris Hagen, and Joanne Saria.
Podcast producer, Sally Schilling. Jessica Maria Ross is our senior community engagement strategist. Music by Privileges.
Interns are Vanessa S. Nelson, Mariana Sousa,
Anjali Bhatt, and Sinead Santage.
The View from Here is funded in part by the California Endowment.
Place and Privilege was produced and edited by Catherine Stifter with engineering assistance from Paul Conley.
Listen to our 8-part podcast series, available on Apple iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Follow us on social media with hashtag ViewOnHousing.
Thanks for listening to The View from Here from Capital Public Radio.